This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
All right. Danny and Gallant, I promised a story about sort of quasi-quarantine because pro sports, for the most part, they don't have quarantines. In the NBA, there's no bed checks. You have to be at the shoot around in the morning. You have to be at the game at night. You have to attend practice. But there's nobody making sure what time you get in. I know baseball used to have curfews. I'm not sure if they still do. I'm less familiar with that. The NFL is a sport with curfews and with bed checks. And when they're on the road in a visiting hotel, they have people stationed at each end of the hallway to make sure people don't go frittering about in the night before a game. Like, it's one of the more controlled environments. And that brings us to one Jeremy Stevens, who was product of this state, both at the high school, the college, and the pro level. Series of misdeeds. By last count, he'd been arrested in four different states across this great country. And at a road game in 2006, it was at Cleveland. And the Seattle Seahawks are visiting there. Jeremy Stevens, at this point, I believe, is injured, so he was going to be inactive for the game, but he was on the trip as someone who was traveling with them. And according to someone I knew with the team, he ordered at night. All of a sudden, the elevator dings, which is unusual because it's a player's floor, so nobody should be coming up to that floor. The Seahawks have that entire floor of the hotel rented out, and the person in charge goes and sees who's in the elevator, and it's an individual in a tuxedo with a, I don't know if he had a top hat, but there was definitely a bow tie involved. And he's carrying a pizza in one hand and a bag in the other, within which is a liter of hard liquor. And he says that, well, this is a delivery that has been ordered by Mr. Stevens. And the person goes and knocks on the door that Jeremy Stevens is staying and says that,
bow tie?
Yeah, somebody's here. And apparently he's a limo driver because the only way you could get food and booze at this time of night was to rent a limo. He says you owe him $600, and I suggest you tip him well. At which point, Mr. Stevens breaks off several $100 bills to cover his tab. He does not want to let the hardworking fellow who has delivered his late night order to go unpaid. The exchange is made. The person in charge of security there goes back to the elevator. Requisitions said pizza and bag containing hard alcohol from the courier at this point in the tuxedo, thanks him for his service, goes back to Jeremy Stevens' room, informs Jeremy that, you know the rules, no food and booze late at night, keeps the pizza, does not give him the hard alcohol, justice is served, the quarantine preserved.
Oh, man, he spent like $700 on this at least.
To get told you broke the rules, you don't get your pie.
That's pretty funny.
That was pretty good. I don't believe Jeremy Stevens was terribly fond of that particular security guard for the rest of it, but I've always enjoyed that situation. Look, I don't know if you'd have to do that with baseball players if you set up this return to play where you have essentially a quarantine, but somebody texted in and saying that, hey, what are you saying they have to stay in their rooms? They can go for a drive. They can go for a walk. They can go and get groceries just like you can. That's actually not true. And here's why. Because each of us is practicing social distancing, but all of us, to varying degrees, are doing things that bring us in contact with the people. If you open a package, like it's been shown that the virus can maintain and stay on a hard surface for up to 3 days on cardboard. There's some talk that it's been there. All of these things are, to one degree or another, a risk. And the idea that you're going to go into a quarantine with other baseball players is that everybody's going to test and show themselves to be negative so they can then be comfortable being in contact with each other, grabbing a baseball, throwing a baseball back, all of the different things that even with no mound visits and sitting 6 feet apart on the bench, you're still going to do things that are causing risk. The only way to preserve and to make sure the best chance of making sure everybody stays healthy is that those players who pass the quarantine test and enter into that then reduce to the best they can every contact they have with the untested world. Like, you try and eliminate that as best you can. So they're going to have in some respects, more freedom because they're going to be able to play a sport and do things that otherwise you'd say, hey, don't do that because you might pass it. But they're going to have less freedom when it comes to contact with the outside untested world. So that's where the difficulty or the choice would come in. Does a player want to go through that and say, okay, for 4 months or for the foreseeable future, I'm going to be willing to live with that social restriction that my contact with people outside this circle that's been tested and is playing games and televising the games is going to be minimized as much as I possibly can.
You've got that as a factor. You've also got the factor that a lot of these players are young men. We've all done dumb things when we are young. Some of us still do the dumb things at age 30 or potentially age 31. Not talking about myself.
Age 45. No way. I'm an idiot. I'm trying to be the best idiot I can and not do dumb stuff. But yeah, that's hard. And asking somebody in their 20s that's a millionaire to do that?
Especially when you've got that money. I would be so tempted to challenge all of these restrictions placed on me. And I think for certain clubhouses, if you've got strong leadership, maybe that's something that you can keep your thumb over. But what if the season just goes disastrously as well? Say you're the Baltimore Orioles. Say you're the Seattle Mariners. Say you're one of the teams that's projected to have 100 losses this coming season. What happens when the season goes off the rails? How do the players respond? Do the players say, you know what? I'm done. I'm not even going to show up. I'm just going to go home. Like, these are the factors that are definitely, like, I would imagine, very low on the checklist of things that baseball needs to take care of before this potentially happens. And by the way, it's just a reported proposal. It is not something that baseball is taking any action on. They're just trying to find a plan to potentially have baseball return by mid-May. There's nothing concrete right now. But these are real factors. And I think just actual sanity of a player. I'm not crying for these guys, you know? I'm not. I feel like for that salary that I would be able to suck it up. But at the same time, they are humans. And you have to put yourself in the shoes of those people who are living an entirely different life than you. We got some texts in from people that talked about the military, which is totally understandable. Like, there are a lot of guys who voluntarily go to the military, and for 6 months longer, they might be in Iraq or Afghanistan or some other hell, essentially, and just stuck there for all that time. But those are people that consciously knew they were getting into something like this that went through training, that went through boot camp. They're just wired differently than a baseball player. And you have to factor that in. Every single person is different. And every single person is wired differently and is used to different things. So for a baseball player who might be coddled, you might consider them coddled, or you just might consider them an athlete. This is different. This is a totally different situation for them. And it's definitely not something that any of them signed up for.
The issue that you're talking about is informed consent. Which is that when you make a decision, you're aware of the potential risks and what you're choosing to do. And that's not to minimize the sacrifices that any member of the military makes.
Exactly.
Or what is asked of them. But that the awareness of what might be possible, you have an idea of when you choose to do it. In baseball, those players who signed these contracts could have never envisioned that they would be asked to perform in these sort of circumstances. And it's not like I feel bad or say, oh my gosh, that's, you could never, it's wrong to even ask them. But that question of should they be forced to or even expected to do it, I think is a valid one. Look, this ties into a bigger issue that every one of us is facing right now. Every one of us is facing a loss of certain personal freedom. And the question of how we balance that loss of freedom with social responsibility. Like, how do we take care of, like, be a good, responsible neighbor and someone else who is looking out for the welfare of the others, which I can speak for myself personally. I take very seriously that I'm not as worried about getting sick as I am worried about passing the disease along to someone who would be more at risk. It's not that I want to get sick and I actually am kind of scared about it, but my biggest fear would be that I'm a vector, that I would carry it to someone who would not be able to fight off the infection. Like, that's just unthinkable to me. Like, that's really, really awful. each of us is dealing with this. And the other thing is that we're all dealing with is different attitudes toward it. There are some people that take this way more seriously than other people take it. I think that's unfortunate, but it's also part, we value personal liberty in this country. So when you mix all of those things together, the person that texted in about saying, hey, the idea that they're more limited than we would and they can't go get groceries is ridiculous. I explained why it's not. The person just texted back and said, bullcrap, exclamation point. They have to quarantine themselves just like we do. So, look, we can't even agree and have sort of straightforward discussions about what it would mean to enter into, like, the fact is, and now you've got 35, 20 to 30-year-old baseball players who are going to be expected.
Plus team employees.
Right,
and more.
That have to preserve all of these things. Now you see the difficulties of when we do, all of us, start to go back to work or resume normalcy, we're all going to be answering these questions of what is responsible, what are the sacrifices that we're willing to make for our own salary, for our own financial well-being, and how best do we balance and mitigate the risk we're facing with sort of the everyday realities that at some point things are going to get up and get going again, because it's not, our society can't stay in this space, and I don't think we should expect to either. This should pass. We should find ways to fight it. But I think that this speaks to a larger issue that every single one of us is facing.
100%, and it's also a challenge that every single corporation and every single person that is looking to make money in this country is thinking long and hard about right now. Because, yes, living is important, but living, it requires money. And unfortunately, we are running into situations where more and more people are finding themselves out of work. For a baseball player, if you are making a baseball salary, you have probably saved up a pretty good amount of money. Even if you are in a rookie contract, you probably have a pretty good amount stowed away. So it's definitely different, especially for the average person that is looking at this and thinking to themselves, like, well, I mean, this person's getting paid to play a sport. Wow, he's playing a sport in quarantine while he's making like hundreds of thousands of dollars at the very minimum, if not more. Oh, wow. Woe is him. But it's more the good thing right now is that there is at the very least something that is being entertained. Because honestly, yesterday, Danny, I thought to myself, we're not going to see anything. We're not going to see anything until at the very least August, September, from the sound of things. They're proposing mid-May. There are a lot of things that need to be figured out. And the biggest of all is whether or not this idea that they can come out with this quick testing process that would allow to determine whether or not somebody has the coronavirus in a matter of like 10 to 15 minutes or so, if that's actually realistic. If it is, great. If it is, hopefully the entire country gets it before these sports leagues as well. That's what a lot of this is hinging on, and we'll see if actually that process continues. But I will say, like, while we are nitpicking a lot of this, in summation, I am happy hearing this news. I'm happy hearing this proposal is out there.
And the idea is, and it was reported by Jeff Passan, and baseball has acknowledged the discussion of contingency plans. This isn't anything that's been set in stone, but the Major League Baseball discussing a potential return to play in May, in which all 30 teams would be located in Arizona. Games would be played, including doubleheaders, at some of the 10 different Cactus League ballparks and facilities that are there, or at Chase Field, which is present there. There's also a handful of other facilities that are there. They would be played on television. There would be no crowds that would be there. I would say here would be the three things that I would say need to happen. The first is, testing would have to be so widespread that the use of tests and equipment for testing in any of the lab space for baseball is not making an impact. It's not denying testing opportunities to people in healthcare fields, to potential people who have it. There has to be such an abundance of testing that this doesn't impact it. I think that's the prerequisite, number one. The second thing is, I do think that the players have to have a choice. I think the players have to be given a choice. If they choose to not want to work in that circumstance and not collect their paycheck, that's their choice. I don't think you can draft someone into this scenario and say, hey, this is what you have to do, because I think it makes it – it's – players should have the choice. I think all employees right now should have the choice that if they don't want to do their job because of the risks that are associated with it or the circumstances of it, that you're not obligated to do your job. You can choose to not do your job and not be paid.
That's true. There is, though, the idea of peer pressure because you're on a team and all of a sudden guys are playing. Oh, you're the one that's not playing? Okay. And that's how the players who would probably show up would react, thinking about those guys who aren't there. And the guys who aren't there, ultimately, they might end up caving in because of peer pressure and joining along in. I'm curious as to what the split would be, Danny, as far as voting on this, something like this, on the idea of all these players deciding to play in Arizona but being essentially under quarantine and not being allowed to move around in the same kind of fashion that maybe they would be if they were at home, with slightly different guidelines as far as that, especially as far as social distancing rules and what we've been doing ourselves over the last couple of weeks.
My guess is 80 to 90% of the players would choose to work under these circumstances.
That's a lot.
Would choose to volunteer. I think you'd have 80 to 90% that would involve choose to do it, because you're simply going to have a choice of, do you want to work or do you not? Do you want to not get paid? That question, if it becomes an option, and you're probably not even going to be earning your full salary at the point that that happens. That's what I think. And then the third thing, and this is probably the hardest to answer, is what is the actual health risk, both to the participants in these games? What's the health risk to someone that the virus is going to be introduced even after the testing has been done and all of the participants test negative, that it's impossible to completely shut off their contact with the outside world and create a complete Pauly Shore-like biosphere? What's the danger that it's going to get reintroduced and what happens? I think that that's probably the most solvable of the problems, because I think with continued testing, and I think that there is even a way that it could help. It could help the rest of the society and figure out in ways to, how do you identify if there are subsequent outbreaks? How do you isolate and create and treat those and keep them from, in essence, reintroducing a contagion and starting a second wave? I think that that's the most doable of the three, but I think it starts with the testing.
100%. And it's cool to hear that maybe there is something in the works. Because it does sound like not just baseball, but basketball, they think that something's coming right around the corner. Hopefully this thing that's coming right around the corner comes to the general public sooner than that.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's now time for us to take a tour around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
It is time for Around the NFL. Jess, how are you?
Jess.
Hello. I am great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. What have we got around the docket today?
You sound fantastic. Over in Baltimore, not so shocking news. John Harbaugh, a little worried about technical security in the NFL's virtual draft. The Harbaugh's not really known for paranoia or anything.
Yeah, they're not known for paranoia. I like this idea of the virtual draft. I was kind of bummed to hear that they're going to allow an IT guy with the general manager, because I kind of like the idea of, like, that being part of your skill set. Like, you got to be able to troubleshoot this, man. Like, you got to have a backup for your backup, and instead, like, get your grandchild in there to help you figure out the wireless router and all of that stuff. I got to admit, man, there's part of me that's rooting for chaos with this.
Why hasn't any team consulted us about, I don't know, doing things via video chat? I mean, we've been doing this together for, what, like 6 months? Like,
there's a consulting opportunity here for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, come on, pay us. I want a little extra cash. Johnny boy, what's up?
Well, we've got some exciting news in the Hard Knocks world. As sources report, the Rams and Chargers will be featured if there are indeed training camps.
Do you like this?
Boring.
Well, we've seen the Rams not too long ago, right? We saw them when they first moved to L.A., and they had Gerald Hayes, who didn't believe
that
dinosaurs existed.
That season was terrible. That season was terrible.
We did get Jared Goff not knowing which side of the earth the sun rose on, however.
That was the only memorable part of that season.
Nah, Gerald Hayes not believing in dinosaurs, that was pretty funny. But yeah, it was a largely boring. Didn't they have the offensive line coach, the former military guy who was pretty funny. He was enjoyable as well. I want him to show the interaction between these two front offices, because understated hostility between the Chargers and the Rams. Like, those two groups do not like each other. And there's season ticket pricing that's involved and all sorts of shared facilities. I hope you get a little chance of that, because these two teams, I don't know if it'll ever be a rivalry, but those two front offices don't like each other, the business sides.
You know, I used to like Hard Knocks, Danny. I'm out on Hard Knocks. I thought last season stunk, too. I mean, Antonio Brown's the biggest circus that we've seen possibly in NFL history, and he's in the show for, what, like 10 minutes? Honestly, I thought they did a very poor job of covering that. And these teams, they're so paranoid about what gets leaked out, and they actually control essentially what is shot of them. And I wonder sometimes how much they're hamming things up. I'm out on Hard Knocks. There have been some good seasons, like, you know, Hard Knocks in 2015, which I was in for 2 seconds.
What? Reality TV isn't totally real, though?
I want to get back to you being in Hard Knocks. What were you doing?
Oh, I just, my face showed up in slow motion for 2 seconds.
Are you serious? In slow-mo?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was
did
great.
Did you look good?
I looked okay. I was wearing a hat. You couldn't see my luxurious
Were you playing
plume.
Flag football, like in the background?
I should have been. They should have gotten highlights of me like, Paul Blood is a flag football star who dabbles in the media, and then like asking Bill O'Brien a question, O'Brien getting upset with me. Yeah, it would have been great.
Brian Cushing was my favorite moment that year, when first he took Alfred Blue and just destroyed him in a blocking drill because he was mad that Blue had shoved him in the back, and said, he goes, first of all, don't do that to me. Second of all, third of all, I'm the man. And then he puked and said, like, hey, I just puked right over there.
I love Cushing.
Was he that big a meathead?
It's funny, because when you talk with him, he was, like, very quiet and sounded almost like a scholar. But when he was on the field, he was just a completely different character, and especially on Hard Knocks, but in games as well. There was a mic'd up from him, I think, against the Cleveland Browns, where he headbutted a guy without his helmet on and starts bleeding everywhere. And he basically says, ha, I headbutted that guy. Whoops. I look like Frankenstein.
Sean McVay says he never envisioned cutting Todd Gurley, but here we are as they're going running back by committee as it stands.
That question and that idea, do you want to hear McVay dodge the question about whether Gurley's healthy or not?
Yes.
It is.
Is this an injury thing? Is he the same player, coach? I mean, it just seems to be a question that's always been lingering about Todd Gurley. Sean.
Yeah, you know, I would just say this. You said it right. When you look at the amount of touchdowns he's been able to score, you talk about the feel he has in the red zone. It is electric. It is dynamic. He's a superstar, and he's earned that status just based on the charisma.
Dude, that answer goes on for another minute, and he doesn't answer the question about if Todd Gurley was hurt.
And he still sounds like John Caparulo.
Everybody's such a know-it-all. You know, I'm sick of people who read. Because they think they know everything, all right? And there's some stuff I just don't want to know, all right? I don't care.
Don't care about Todd Gurley's ankle.
He does really sound like Sean McVay. That is an incredible form of Ear Olympics that you played there, Danny. I think when it comes down to it, we're going to look back at the Rams and the end of Todd Gurley as the end of that Rams offense. And I know that there's an idea that paying a running back does not generally work out well, but I think it's a lot easier to say in principle not to pay a running back than it is to actually follow through on that.
Don't pay a running back, Paul. Don't do it. You're crazy
if
you do.
It's hard, though. It's hard when you find yourself in the situation. Now, the Carolina Panthers are supposedly having internal discussions about giving Christian McCaffrey that long-term deal.
Dumb.
All I will say is, look at some of the average to above average quarterbacks over the last couple of years whose play have been elevated by multi-purpose running backs. Dalvin Cook with Kirk Cousins. Jared Goff with Todd Gurley. Lamar Jackson with Mark Ingram. Like, there are guys that maybe are elevating the play of quarterbacks that aren't that good because they have these great running backs with them. We'll see with Lamar Jackson. We'll see we've seen it with Dak Prescott before, his rookie season as well, with Ezekiel Elliott. I get it. I'm with you. Like, you better be very careful about paying a running back, but I do think it's a lot easier said than done because sometimes these guys are so good and you're like, man, that guy's the reason my quarterback's good.
What happens if Ezekiel Elliott has a bad season? Are we going to think of him next offseason the same way we thought of Todd Gurley this year?
Do you think he's going to have a bad offseason, though? Because he was holding out, and his holdout, he goes to Cabo. He's like the James Harden of the NFL.
Oh, that's a great sign then. That if he just, it's only bad when he goes on holdout and gets fat. Like that's
a really positive sign for what's going to happen. This is a bad offseason for that, isn't it? Gosh, he's going to come back. He's going to be a little hefty fella when he comes into camp this year. Yeah, you know what? This for Ezekiel Elliott, this might not work out. You've turned me. I forgot about this offseason. Thanks, Rona.
That is going to be around the NFL. We've got the second of our first round Mad Madness games coming up. It's seed 2 versus seed 3 in Jessamyn McIntyre's region. It's Division 1 football. You'll hear it next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Well, we had our first round matchup. The Mad Madness bracket is underway. Herm versus Bart. That's one matchup. The other first round matchup in Jessamyn McIntyre's region, we're going to get to that right now as Mad Madness continues.
Who says that sports are only played on fields, courts, and ice?
Playoffs? We'll talk about playoffs.
They're also played on podiums.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
In locker rooms.
All y'all take this down. I'm pissed, man. Soldier.
And wherever else you can jam a microphone.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is the Danny and Gallant Sports Rant Bracket on 710 ESPN Seattle.
And we continue the second seed in this region. A rant that Jessamyn McIntyre first heard when she was working on Colin Cowherd's show and, in fact, was the first person to flag it. It has become a classic. It is Dan Hawkins, Colorado coach.
Some guys might decide that it's a little too tough or it's a little too hard, it's a little too demanding. I'll give you a little example. Kind of sums up some things, but I got an anonymous letter from a parent. Said, you know, we just kind of bummed out this year that the boys only get 2 weeks off before they start their summer conditioning program. You know, normally they get three. Well, we gave them a week at the start of the semester rather than at the end, but here's my point, okay? It's Division One football! It's the Big 12! It ain't your murals! You got 2 weeks after finals, you got a week of July 4th, and you got a week before camp starts. That's a month! That's probably more vacation than you guys get. And we're a little bummed out that we don't get 3 weeks? Go play intramurals, brother. Go play intramurals.
Danny, are you familiar with Hans Zimmer's work? Hans Zimmer's a famous composer that does the background music for lots of movies. For example, the Batman franchise with Christopher Nolan. Also, he did Inception.
Pirates of the Caribbean?
And Hans Zimmer's Pirates of the Caribbean as well. Yes, Lydia. As songs build up in Hans Zimmer, it's like a slow build. And then all of a sudden, bah, like a crescendo of loud noises. And that was what we just heard from Dan Hawkins. I think it is perfect. I think right now this is the front runner in Jess's bracket.
Jess, what went into the selection of Dan Hawkins as your two seed in this region?
I think the accelerating crescendo definitely is a big part of it, so I appreciate you pointing that out, Paul. Just the fact that he was trying to explain it quietly, but his rage from within just really drew me to this. Plus, college football, it was just a beautiful rant against what he considered privileged parents of privileged players, and I don't know even know if they were or not, and I don't care his reasoning. It was just the beauty of where his anger was placed, because I don't even know what the premise was for the question. He just got so angry and needed to get that out there. So it was the bubbling rage that got me.
It is, and it's not as strong a candidate as that is. It's up against a very tough competitor here in Kansas City Royals manager Hal McCray.
Did you consider threat for Miller with the bases loaded in the seventh?
No, don't ask me all these stupid-ass questions. No. in the all these stupid ass questions every night. Find the I hit Brett from Miller. Miller's starting the game. He's playing against left-handed pitchers. Brett is not playing against left-handed pitchers. Find the out back for Miller. You think I'm a goddamn fool? I'm tired of all these ass questions every night. And stay out here asking all these dumb ass questions. Stupid. Suckers. Ask me that stupid ass shit every night. I'm not taking no shit off. You guys are not taking no shit off the players. I'm sick and tired. I'm fed up with everything. No shit from you guys. No shit from you players. And yet they can do any thing they want to do. I'm sick and tired of all this bullshit. Now, put that in your pipe and smoke.
It's a great end. Now, put that in your package. What's the swear count? What's the beep count, do you think? Did we get to 40?
I think it's 25. It's above 25. I thought Elia, which is in a different bracket, I thought Elia might be the... We may need to determine that, who had the highest level of profanity. Does the profanity enhance or detract from the rant?
For the way that we play it over the air with FCC regulations, I think that it definitely detracts because of all the beeping that's going on. And honestly, having watched the rant that he went on, I think the rant is more about the very many things that he found in his office that he could throw and shove and knock over.
He does. He picks up a telephone, which this is one of the, we've lost like the big telephones with the multiple lines that you would use two hands to pick up. He picks it up and hucks it as if it were a 40-pound weight. Like it is a two-handed yank, pulling cords out of sockets throw that he does, and he cuts one of the reporters. One of the recorders has blood underneath his eye. Jess, your thought? It's a very strong contender. This is a tough matchup. Number two seed Dan Hawkins versus number three Hal McRae.
Yeah, it really was. And yeah, the physical involvement, which was absent in most of my other rants except for body language, really sold me. Plus, it's a little old school. It is one of the more classic rants, and I did need one from a different era. And I was very excited to be able to listen to that. Listen to it really hard and carefully, by the way, because when you talk about that swear rant, oh boy, is it sky high. So I most of my other ones didn't actually have any profanity and needed to sprinkle a little bit of that in there. You know, you need a twitchy guy when you're drafting these things, guys. So that's why I went with Mr. McRae.
They're not all going to be Boy Scouts. When you talk about a locker room of contenders, they're not all going to be Boy Scouts. Also, Hal McRae gets bonus points for lumping his players in with the media. He's just had enough from everybody. He's tired of taking it from the players. He's tired of taking it from the reporters. It's simply a man who has had enough.
He would not handle quarantine well.
Or maybe quarantine is exactly what he wanted. I don't want to be around anybody. This is perfect for me. I don't want to talk to anybody. Saying hi to the mailman is a little bit too much for me. Those are
I got to say, though, Hawkins. It's Hawkins in a landslide. I'm telling you. That Hawkins rant is the best one of this bracket. It's my favorite of the day.
Polls are now open. You can vote via Twitter. Jessamyn McIntyre has posted both the audio of the rants as well as a poll that you can vote in. Or you can text in 710-710 and indicate Hal or McRae, Dan or Hawkins, something so we can differentiate between the two of those. Results will be tomorrow when the next batch of first-round games resumes on our Mad Madness tournament. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to be back to raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Nanny Odile, who is my purported nanny online, is providing reviews of the 710 houses, which are really quite funny. Talking about the one house looks like it's a waiting room for an ear, nose, and throat doctor because of the volume of phlegm, coughs, propensity to get stuffed up.
A lot of phlegm in that one. So phlegmy.
I believe that's the Wassel Clayton house. He has presided over, and Annie has said that House East would be fun for about 72 hours. Then I'd be screaming, I have stuff to do. How about we turn down the little Uzi, but it would fall upon deaf ears. My life would be a kaleidoscopic hellscape of sneakers, esports, and Meghan Markle memes. Just a shout-out to Stacey Ross and Taylor Jacobs.
I feel like there would be many conversations being had at all times. Some of them very, very one-person conversations being held aloud by one Stacey Ross.
I would have a blast. I guarantee House East.
I'd enjoy that house. I think it would be a lot of fun.
I believe House East would be by far the most fun, and I don't think it's particularly close. I agree. I also think this month is my sobriety anniversary. I'll have been sober for 3 years, a little bit later this month. This would be an entirely different equation were I still drinking. House East would have been a pain that I would not have wished upon anyone to be in a quarantine house with me at that point. It would have been absolutely awful. It's now time for us to raise flags. Lydia, we'd like to bring you on, the moral center of this show. How do you feel about the house you're placed in? You and Paul and the Graz would be housemates. Is it House North?
House South.
South. You guys are down south. The Dirty South.
Dirty South. Well, we'd have great story time, I believe, between all those people in that household. And we over-index on Patriots fans, which seems, a little unfair. Things might go terribly on Sundays in that household. And then Jake and I would probably just get into, apologizing wars.
That's true. You've got two of the nicest people in the entire station, in Jake Heaps and Lydia Cruz. Any flags you'd like to raise with Roe today?
I'd love to raise a flag because April 7th is World Health Day. And it just so happens that, of course, we are in the mid of COVID-19 response. And World Health Day is specifically with an emphasis on nurses and midwives. Just a day that you honor those people that do so many great things 365 days of the year, but especially this year, just want to give a huge shout out to them, all the people working in the medical industry, because you are saving lives, and thank you for everything you do.
Very well said. The healthcare professionals are taking risks and rising to an unthinkable challenge in what they're trying to fight. Paul, your thoughts for any flags?
I'm going to raise a flag to Rice Krispie Treats. Rice Krispie Treats are the perfect snack. You got some marshmallow, you got some crunchy texture from the old Krispies. Mix it all together. It's only 90 calories. It's fantastic. Hits the spot. Decided it's my new, mid-show snack. Ooh, wonderful.
At 9 a.m.? You're eating Rice Krispie Treats at 9 a.m.?
What's wrong with that?
Quarantine Paul checking down marshmallows at 9 a.m.
What's wrong with eating marshmallows at 8:30? There's Rice Krispies. There's cereal in the treat. That's eating cereal.
I don't believe it's
a
breakfast.
He makes a valid point.
Is it a breakfast food?
Yeah.
Is a Rice Krispie treat qualified for breakfast?
Lucky Charms have marshmallows.
Nobody thinks Lucky Charms is an actual cereal. My mom would never let me get Lucky Charms when I was a kid.
It has whole grains.
Wait, could you eat Lucky Charms when you were a child? Your mom wouldn't let you watch wrestling? Yeah. No chance. There's no chance I'd ever get that.
There was this cereal that I love. I don't remember who made it. It was like this sweet Chex that was mixed with marshmallows. It was Spider-Man cereal. It was the best. It was only in existence for about a year and a half, and I was allowed to eat that, but I was not allowed to eat it every day. It was basically every 4 days I could have it or so.
Sweet corn pops were about as sugary as my mom let us get, or unless grape nuts, where you just take the whole jar of sugar when she wasn't looking and start dumping that in there. Have some quarry rocks. Jessamine, your flag.
Yes, I am once again going to raise a flag for Taylor Jacobs, who is doing all of our graphic work and digital work and helped us organize our rants bracket for Mad Madness. And his dad, who we got a positive update on, is taken off a ventilator and has had a positive turn. We're thinking about you every single day, Taylor, and he's still working his butt off for us here at the station throughout all of this. And when, it strikes someone close to home, it's just going to stick in your mind a little bit more. And I just appreciate everything that he does all the time, and I know you guys do too.
We do. We love you, Taylor. We're glad to hear and encouraged by the news about your dad, and we're all thinking of you, and thank you for your help. My flag is going to be thrown on any NFL owners, apparently, and there are some out there who are complaining about the fact that Steven and Jerry Jones being related might provide them an exception to the rule about having a virtual draft. People complaining it might not be fair that Steven and Jerry Jones are in the same room. What are you guys doing? How is it possible that it would be to your advantage to eliminate Jerry Jones from the draft proceedings? You want Jerry Jones as involved as possible in this. And any person who is saying, oh, it's not fair because Jerry and Steven are going to be together. You want Jerry Jones there. Like, you want him as involved as possible. Come on. It's unbelievable. Like, why would you complain? Like, oh, it's not fair that they're together? You don't want Jerry Jones bending the proceedings to his will? You want him as involved as possible. I don't understand why these guys can't see that. The more Jerry Jones, the better for you.
The more Jerry Jones, the better. I also think it's rich that John Harbaugh is, like, paranoid about this as well, because he's probably afraid that, like, Bill Belichick knows a rule that he doesn't and he's going to get pantsed again.
I did enjoy that, man. I totally enjoyed that when Harbaugh was complaining about it. And no, it's not even half belief.
I am 90%. Sorry, Danny. Sorry. Keep going.
No. Harbaugh, I'm 90% certain that Belichick did that specifically so he could stick it to Harbaugh. But I don't 100%. Even think he believed that it was a significant advantage. And he certainly could have used it against other teams, but he's like, no, I'm sticking it to that guy because he complained so much.
Yes.
Lydia?
Oh, no. It wasn't even important. I was it's the team that hired all of the data analytics people in the offseason, like four specific people dedicated to that on their team. And this could be sort of an Astros Cardinals situation again, where you've built this evaluation system and you're paranoid about someone else having or getting access to it.
See, that's such a better point than I just made.
No,
that's
yours better.
No, like the idea that, like, oh, look who's got all the nerds on his side. Now he's worried about IT security. Oh, they're going to steal my super secret formulas.
Yeah, that's way more fun. I like the voices that you've added, though.
want to thank everybody for listening. I had a great time on the show today. And for me, this has been 3 hours of incredible relief spending it with three of my favorite coworkers that I've ever had. And really enjoyed talking to all of you. Look forward to doing it tomorrow. Thanks to Jessamyn McIntyre, Lydia Cruz, who keep it all on the rails. Chris Singleton, who is a really, really fun guy to talk to. Brock Heward, John Clayton, and he's Paul Gallant. And about 2 months into any quarantine, he is clearly going to go nuts and unleash himself on a Bentley.
Listen, it's one of those things that you just have to do every now and then. Hopefully I'll only have one Rice Krispie treat a day. He is Danny O'Neill. Congrats on 3 years, buddy. So long, farewell, and you will hear us tomorrow.